Can we live without our smartphones? A new survey shows that in a fire, we'd grab our phones before just about anything else in the house. Techonomics host Jason Middleton speaks with the author of that survey titled Digital Oxygen Now.
Hello, and thanks again for listening, as always. Hey, I like my smartphone. You like your smartphone, and we both most likely really dig our apps. A new study helps put our affinities into context. Here we go. If forced to choose, people would rather have access to apps than access to sunlight in a 24-hour period. Wait, there's more. More people would rather leave their house unlocked for an entire day than leave their phone unlocked and unattended on a park bench for an hour. That one makes sense. And finally, we tend to eschew any privacy worries if we really, really like the app we're in. Kind of like if we really, really like a new human relationship. For instance, users exhibit less security diligence the longer they use an app that they're really jamming with. Here's my chat about smartphones and apps with an author of the new study called Which is More Important to You, Real Oxygen or Digital Oxygen?
My name is Neil Wu Becker, the Vice President of Marketing at A10 Networks.
I'm looking forward to getting into some of the findings you have in the new research, but let's just start at a macro level. I was reading recently that the iPhone 4 had more computing power than NASA had in 1969 to put a man on the moon. So I kind of understand how we're getting addicted to these things, but at the same time, it's really not necessarily the hardware. It's the software, isn't it?
It sure is. And ultimately, the atomic unit's really the applications that we're using or the apps. I mean, what we're finding in this global study about the importance of applications in our lives is pretty startling. 86% of respondents globally basically said they can't live without apps. It is so fundamentally important and ingrained in their lives, in their daily lives. In fact, so much so that they said it would be physically uncomfortable or they would just struggle to get through their days without them. And when you start putting that to the test, that can mean a lot of things when you say, hey, I can't live without my apps. Mm-hmm. We asked the question, well, what does that really mean? And 50% of that same global populace in our study said that they consider applications as important as basic necessities of life, like eating, drinking, or breathing. So that to us was very startling.
Yeah, well, I mean, you did title your research findings Digital Oxygen, so that was kind of an indication of how important we take these things. Are there certain types of apps that you saw more mentions of?
We looked at applications or apps both from a personal and a work-related standpoint. As you know, you use apps in your daily life that could actually blend both your work life and your personal life. In fact, that trend is happening more and more. So when you start looking at the risks associated with it, it's very difficult to decouple, hey, a personal app from, say, a work app and say you're safer using this one or not, because they're all commingling on the same devices and on corporate and home networks that we use every day.
Are you referencing the crossover of data? Let's say, for instance, we're using Google Work at work and then we use Gmail when we're at home, or our calendars kind of crossover. Is that what you're referencing there?
Absolutely. That's one answer. That's one example. I would say our social media apps are being used for business more and more, not just for personal. So the information sharing and the ability to be exploited is there for both an employer as well as the individual who becomes an employee and a consumer at different times of the day. But it can also work for different types of applications like airline apps or hotel apps. We use these for work as well. They're not just personal apps. Mm-hmm. And the information that we're sharing, which can be very personal sometimes, but also business related, is something that needs to be probably a little more cognizant amongst us all.
Yeah, you used the word exploited right there, which goes back to the risk factor that your study kind of extrapolates. Don't we have to have some kind of implicit trust in the development of apps when we opt in to use it? Is there an understanding that maybe we are being a little too magnanimous when we agree to their terms of engagement?
Yeah, that's a really great question. If you don't mind, let me share some data on that.
I'd like that.
The good news is that we're finding at least 8 out of 10 people globally, including those in the United States, 83% to be exact, are saying, hey, at the point of download, when I first want to go to a website or web-based app or use an app on a phone, that I at least think about, is this app being built safely? Is it okay to submit certain information like my email address or passwords, birth dates, things like that? But then after we start getting into the use of that application, we stop thinking about security according to the study's results, and we, in deference more to performance and ease of use, we actually care more about, hey, is this app fast? Is it cool? Am I using it in a way that can get something done sooner than later. That is is an issue. And what we also found in the report is when you start asking these same respondents, do you believe the developers of the apps you use? They could be an IT organization, or they could be a kid out of LA or in San Francisco building an app. Do you think they prioritize security when they architect it? And even so, do you even think they care? Do they have the expertise to even do it? And 2 out of 5 globally, 43%, said no. Oof. They don't believe that app developers are qualified from a security standpoint to build an app for us, let alone even care about it. So when you couple that with the fact that we are, in a sense, assuming that we're going to be safe or hoping we're going to be safe, that's not necessarily a concoction that's a security approach that you want to adopt.
43%, that's an astounding number. I mean, to have that kind of, I don't know, question in your brain about whether this is secure and still opting in to use it. Is there a way that we can move the needle in favor of the consumer on this?
Unfortunately, the bad guys work as an enterprise. They work together to actually attack us. We need to do a better job as an industry. The vendor community, say A10 Networks being one of them, right. The customers, the individuals, people like you and I, there needs to be a better fraternity between us all in terms of how we educate and how we enable and empower ourselves to actually protect ourselves, the information we have, and also the information we're sharing with our loved ones and our colleagues at work alike.
Okay, there were certain websites 15 years ago we knew you just didn't check. A, you'd never checked them at work, and if you checked them at home, you were opening yourself up to a vulnerability, right? So are there ways with apps that we can kind of like do some hygiene?
There are many employees. I mean, at the end of the day, we're a consumer and an employee, depending on the hour, per se.
Right.
But from an employee perspective, being able to ask an IT organization, is this okay to use, or what types of protections have you put in place, or are you even thinking about it? Because IT organizations need to actually do their jobs as well. There's a big dependency on IT in this study that says, I expect them to protect me. I'm on work time. You're giving me devices and applications to use. I'll do the work and I'll use them, but you better protect me too. That is a conversation, emphasis on the word conversation, that needs to occur between IT organizations and employees. From a consumer standpoint, it's a little more of a deep blue situation because you don't have an IT team sitting at your house. So, but the lessons learned as an employee can translate very nicely over to how to apply that to a consumer world when you go home.
One other finding in the A10 report that stood out to me, and I hate to giggle a little bit, but it's just huge. Nearly 1 in 5 people had their identity stolen. Younger people had their identity stolen. Did that stand out for you too?
Yeah, that was super striking. And keep in mind, we're going to do this study every year. So when you start thinking about it, think about the end of the decade or even next year. Do you, if you're a betting man, do you expect this number to go north or south? But the negligence and the apathy that I was talking about before all plays into this. There are variables in this equation. If we think we're going to get hit and we accept the fact we're going to get hit and just have, I guess, a sense of apathy in the way we download and utilize different types of applications, you're going to get a cause and effect where you have this many people getting hit in terms of identity theft, breaches, and hacks.
Your number of 20% right now, and yes, I am a betting man, and yes, I do think that number will go up, and I think you do too, but it's a market opportunity for A10 in a way because we are almost at market saturation for smartphones. So we can't sell any more smartphones. We can only sell more apps, which means that number is going to go up and up, right?
Absolutely. Think about the number of applications we have on our phones today. Think about the number of applications that we use as power users, and then ask yourself, in 2 to 3 to 5 years, how many more are we going to be using? And that's where we call it more of a blended life versus a balanced life in terms of work and play, and that increases the threat implications and the threat landscapes that we all have to live in every waking hour when we decide to go online with these types of applications.
That's Neil Wu Becker from A10 Networks. For a link to A10, check out the story with this week's show at kgoradio.com/techonomics. And for a link to this or any of our segments, we're also on that page. You can also keyword search Techonomics on iTunes, Audio Boom, and Stitcher. Hey, we've heard of Facebook too, you know. So that's where we put the music we play each week, along with other hate mail for FCC Chair Ajit Pai. You can check it out at facebook.com/techonomicsradio. I'm talking net neutrality there. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics.